Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast, talking about youth baseball coaching and player development. Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field.
We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show.
Well, hey, Josh, how's it going?
It's going well. It is going well, man. I know it's a big weekend. I see you're all decked out. What's going on this weekend?
It is OU Texas weekend, and yeah, I've got all my OU gear on.
This dude is swagged out with OU gear. And then on my end, I couldn't care less. But I know, yeah, it's a big time for all the Oklahomans.
So you're not an OU supporter, or you just?
I mean, I'm impartial. I'm more of the go football kind of guy, you right. know, like go football.
Go my favorite sports team.
Go sports. Funny enough, I know you're an OU fan, but like back like when we start having kids, we're like, oh, we should have like our kids make sure that they grow up as like a college fan. So we're like, oh yeah, OSU, like let's just do it because Katie's brother's big OSU fan. But then like I think we got my son like one jacket that was OSU, and like that's it, like nothing more. That was it.
Oh gosh.
So yeah, go football.
There you go. Well, I mean, it's going to be a great weekend. It looks like John Mateer, the starting QB, is going to actually play, which I didn't think was possible.
Oh my gosh.
So I don't know. All bets are off. I really had no idea what to expect. Before the season began, Texas was ranked number one. Now they've lost a couple games, and now we're actually ahead of them in the rankings. But you know, I have no idea what to expect. It may just come down to how well Arch Manning plays, and we'll see how it goes.
Absolutely. But, absolutely. Yeah, big weekend. I'm assuming you're not going down there? Or
no, in fact, I'm going the opposite direction. We've got a tournament up in Wichita, Kansas.
Oh, there you go.
Weekend.
Nice.
So, and then, of course, we got like the worst draw possible. So we're playing during the OU Texas game.
Oh, man. I'm assuming your families are not happy about that.
I don't know exactly, but I do know that one of our parents this week went and bought one of those like Bluetooth speaker TV combos.
Oh my gosh.
It's like I don't think it's very big. It's probably, I don't know, 20-inch
That's
screen.
Such a college football family right there. That's such a move right there.
I don't know if we'll have it going in the dugout necessarily, but it will be close enough that I'll
That's
be
hilarious.
Able to keep my eye on it.
That's hilarious. At least it's during pool play, so
right,
I mean,
right.
It kind of is what it is, you know? Like that's funny.
We talked about even maybe doing a shortened warm up.
Oh my gosh.
So that we can watch some of that, at least the first half.
Maybe. OU Texas is a huge deal out here in Oklahoma. And when we were trying to figure out our schedules, believe it or not, that OU Texas weekend was like kind of the non-compromise. Like we just couldn't add it to our schedule because we have way too many OU fans.
Yep.
And it's crazy that people would choose to support OU Texas, which I mean, that's fine. But like, rather go watch that game than go watch their kid play. You know, like it's crazy. It is crazy.
Yeah.
They probably would have showed up still to, you know, for little Johnny's game this weekend. But we took this weekend off.
I have to tell you, after living in Dallas for 15 years and hearing it get called Texas OU weekend for 15 years, I'm glad to be back in Oklahoma where we call it the right way, the OU
Texas.
Texas.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Oh man. You been watching any playoff baseball?
Oh my gosh. Gosh, last night's game. Did you see that Dodgers game?
No, I didn't. I didn't actually watch last
night.
Oh
man,
at our son's high school marching band.
When they talk about like mental health, I can't even imagine what that pitcher is going through. I don't know if you saw the highlights.
What happened?
Bases loaded, 1-1 game. Bases juice, two outs. The reliever's in, gets a little dink grounder right back to him. Bases loaded, two outs. Gets hit right back on him. Like it's not a hard shot. It's just kind of like a jam shot right back at him. He goes to field it, misses it, hits off his glove, rushes the throw, picks up the ball and sails it into the backstop. Run scores.
Oh, no.
Game over. They're out of it. Dodgers advance. Dodgers advance because of it. He probably had enough time to breathe, field the ball and throw the guy out first. But I mean, just like I was reading an article.
And they would have won, or they would have just
It would have been tied. It would have been to the 12th inning. It would have been to the next inning. But because it was still tied 1-1. Like, he probably had enough time, like, to field it, throw the ball to first. But, I mean, I was reading an article this morning about it where it's, you know, like, at that moment, the stress peaks. You start having that anxious where it's like, oh, my gosh, the stress out. And, you know, the full panic mode went into play for that pitcher. But when you think about just, like, the mental health of, like, sports, like, I hope that pitcher's okay.
Right.
You know, like, he let down all those fans on a basic thing that I know that pitchers work on over and over, PFPs, pitchers fielding practice. I'm sure, you know, teams work on that nonstop. And it just
– the worst part of it is, like, he's going to have to sit with it the entire offseason.
Until next season. Oh, like, man.
Normally a baseball, all right, you get back out there the next day and you just, you know, go win the next pitch, but there's not going to be a next pitch for a while.
The nice thing about baseball is you get to play the next day, but not for him. I hate the Dodgers. I hate the Dodgers, but they advanced.
Yeah, well, I mean – consolation, the Phillies probably weren't going to win that series anyway. But
I don't know.
The Dodgers are so stacked.
Yep.
They're so
stacked. I'm excited for the Blue Jays. Blue Jays advanced. Dodgers advanced.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised the Yankees got knocked out. But, yeah, they just didn't quite have it.
Blue Jays
tore the cover off the ball. They just hit. We got two game fives tonight. Yeah.
I'm pulling for the Mariners.
Yeah.
Just because I like Big Dumper.
Yes.
Cal Raleigh.
Best baseball nickname ever.
He is a stud, man. And I'm biased to catchers, but man, he is such a stud.
Yeah.
Breaking all those records.
Yeah. That's pretty fun.
Yeah.
And then what's the other one? We got Giles. So that's Mariners, Tigers, and then.
I drew a blank on it the other day. Dang. I gotcha. We have Mariners, Brewers, Cubs.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Brewers, Cubs.
That'll be good.
I don't know, man.
The Brewers have been the best team all season. So I'll be surprised if they don't advance.
But the Cubs being up on them 6-0 last night, they beat them 6-0, the Cubs did.
Golly.
So series tied 2-2.
Let's go.
So game five. Yep.
I think I'm going Cubbies in that one. I got to pull for the Cubbies in that
one. They knocked the Padres out, so yeah, I'll probably pull for the Cubbies.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, yeah, I'm going to be pulling for Mariners, but yeah.
All right. Well, we have a guest that we are going to interview today, and his name is Coach Jimmy Filangieri. But before we get to that, you want to talk about success?
Let's talk about success.
It's time to talk about success.
Woo!
All right, today's success we have coming to, and if you've been following along, we've been breaking down the pyramid of success, which is John Wooden, the pyramid that he set up. Today's word is enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm, yeah. So I feel like this is one of those areas where my personality thrives. I'm a very enthusiastic person, especially if something really good happens on the field. If I see one of my boys make a great play or hit a ball really hard or something like that, I just can't help myself. I get really excited about that, and I want to enjoy those highs. I think the struggle for me then is the flip side of it. Like, if something goes wrong, it's taken me some time, but I've gotten better over time about trying not to overreact to the things that go wrong.
Yes.
And just being like, that's all right. We'll get the next one. Yes. But sometimes then the lack of enthusiasm, I don't know if it like is detrimental if things start going awry and I'm not being as enthusiastic as.
Yeah.
I also don't know how much this depends on the coach versus like the whole, like, is it the whole team that's meant to be enthusiastic? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. But like, as far as like the definition, like it says brushes off upon those with whom you come in contact. You must truly enjoy what you are doing. So, I mean, enthusiasm just so great, but like on the flip side, I don't think it's wrong to not like to be non-enthusiastic, you know, because baseball's so negative already that I think sometimes with like when there's something that doesn't happen or doesn't go our right way, it's almost like best to kind of just like just not accept it, but you know, just kind of be like, okay, well, whatever, let's get to the good stuff now.
Right.
I don't know. I'm the same way. I love being enthusiastic on the field. I love when my pitchers get strikeouts. Like, I'm going to be hooting and hollering top of my lungs when we get a strikeout or, you know, third out of the inning or someone makes a diving catch or whatever. Just because I truly love seeing my players succeed.
I love
that so much. But, like, the negative side, the flip side of it, yeah, I'm sure it does depend on the coach. But I do feel like it can go down a wrong rabbit trail.
You don't want to end up on like a roller coaster where you're really high for the highs and really low for the lows.
Yes.
Like, you want to try and stay as even keeled, especially in baseball.
Yes.
But man, I just can't help myself. I get too excited when things go well and look great.
We have the front row. You know, as a coach,
exactly.
You have the front row to all the success, all the exciting stuff.
And I've always heard the question of, do you hate losing or do you love winning more? And for me, my answer has always been I love winning more.
I don't know if anyone's going to say the opposite, but yeah. I love winning too. I mean, losing, there's a time and place. Like, everyone loses. Baseball, you lose. Sports, you lose. Sometimes in life, you lose. But, like, it's really, like, can you grow from it? Can you learn from it? What can you learn?
Exactly.
But, like, winning, man, yeah. Nothing better than winning a game.
I love to win.
Winning an interview, winning a job. You know, winning at just the small things. You know, there's nothing better than that.
I did try and build into my older team a little bit of, like, enthusiasm culture this season by having a team representative, team leader on our team, be named the culture captain. And it was his job to keep the enthusiasm level high. And I think he's done a pretty good job with that.
Nice.
I don't know how much is translated to success on the field or not, but I mean, he's done a good job in being an enthusiastic encourager of his teammates. So I feel like it's been a positive thing. It does make me wonder though sometimes, like, should this be just one person's job or is it everybody's job? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I do feel like, you know, it's a team sport. Everyone's in it together, so making sure that, like, I mean, you should have like someone that kind of helps kind of light that flame. But yeah, I do think it's on the team to bring enthusiasm. And we, you know, like, one thing that I love talking about is energy and effort, or attitude and effort. And like, your attitude is like a big part of baseball, your attitude. So if you have positive attitude, it's probably going to come out as enthusiastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I want them cheering for their teammates. I want them engaged in the process of the game. I want them, you know, working, for the good of all, and encouraging each other and cheering for each other and lifting each other up. And especially when things go well, like, we want to be as supportive of each other as possible.
Absolutely. And it's funny. I was listening to an interview. I can't remember what college coach it was, but he was talking about that there's actual mandatory, like, to make sure that he sparks enthusiasm, but he actually put like a mandatory, like, almost cheers for his team. So, like, if they're two strikes and the batter fouls it off, it is actually mandatory for the entire dugout to, explode with, like, applause. Like, if their batter, if your batter's up.
Oh, that's cool.
So, like meaning, like, he won that pitch, right? He didn't strike out, he won the pitch. So, if he fouls it off, yeah! If he gets a walk, yeah! You know, like, things like that. It's, like, it's mandatory for the entire team to kind of get behind your player.
Great.
It's really cool.
I like that rule.
Yeah, cool rule. Can you get everyone to buy in on it at a youth age? Maybe. Like, it's going to take some time.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Take some time.
Yeah.
But, like, hearing that, like, even at a college, like, you sometimes have to do mandatory things to make sure everyone's pulling for each other.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to do a little chalk talk?
Let's talk about chalk talk.
Chalk talk.
Learned a hard lesson. Okay. This week. Had a tournament with my younger boys, and it was rough. It was really rough. And got to talking with my assistant coaches about it. And I was like, what, obviously this weekend, I understand there are going to be times when you lose games and it's tough, but we were not competitive. And it was like, it was gut check moment of like, okay, we've done something wrong here. I've done something wrong here. What do we need to do different moving forward? Because this was enough of getting off the rails. That was like, okay, we maybe need to reevaluate how we're doing things. And I realized, one of my assistant coaches helped me realize that, we kind of made a mistake, or I had kind of made a mistake in planning out our season for the fall. I went into this season with the approach of it's fall ball. It's not quite as serious as spring ball. Probably mistake number one. We did a lot of really good work preseason, and then our game schedule got released, and our games for league were all going to be at the same time as what our normal outdoor practice was going to be. And instead of moving our practice time to a different day and maintaining that practice, I just said, well, league games are basically the same thing as practice. Turns out they're not. They're not at all. Because especially at the 9U level, when you're adjusting to kid pitch, you're lucky if you get through two innings. Like, and at that point, then you're also lucky if you bat through the lineup. So we were encountering situations in which maybe a hitter was getting one at bat per game. And so we have reevaluated and decided, okay, for the rest of the season, we've got to have that outdoor practice. We can't replace outdoor practice with these league games. And it kind of got me back to thinking baseball is such a sport of process and routine, that you cannot think that, oh, we've addressed that already and the mm-hmm. kids know it.
Yeah.
And they're just going to continue to know it from now on. You can't just address something in preseason and expect it to stick for the whole season. Baseball is such a routine sport that we have to keep going back to the basics and keep working on the fundamentals and keep doing those little things over and over and over again. So yeah. Kind of a hard lesson to learn. Yeah. I'm hopeful that we can kind of right the ship and finish the season strong.
Yeah.
We're taking a couple of weekends off before our next tournament. So I'm hopeful that we can have a good showing towards the end of October, beginning of November, and then we'll be done after that. But we're going to go ahead and finish the season strong by adding a practice to our weekly schedule. I don't know. That was a tough lesson to learn.
Hey, and there's always a learning curve. There's always things that we learn through just trial and error. Yeah, practices. Sometimes there's teams where you get into like league games and you treat it kind of like a glorified practice. And sometimes it's really great for teams. And then sometimes like you're like, oh man, yeah.
Yeah.
Practice, you know, could have been more beneficial. But like honestly, like I don't think that's anything wrong on you or the coaches or anything like that. I think it's just a matter of just like, okay, well, we tried that, it didn't work, but now we know. You know, now we know.
Our thought process was, look, it's fall, there are other sports.
Yeah.
We didn't feel like for the duration of the season that we could ask our parents to commit to three nights a week. And we still had the indoor practices, so we were still hitting. We were still working on our pitching. It's just the field work went kind of by the wayside, and then it showed up in games. And I had to kind of look myself in the mirror and go, what can we do different? And, you know, it's not the kids' fault. We went over it, but we got to keep going over it.
Yeah.
You got to keep it fresh.
And that's the thing about youth. Yeah. Keep them active with the, like, they're not pros. They're not masters of the game yet. So give them those repetitions over and over.
Yeah.
But yeah. Hey, live and learn.
Yeah.
Now you're in a better spot. Now, like, yeah, you learn from that experience and keep moving on. I've made plenty of bonehead mistakes and like, it is what it is. You know, you learn, you grow from it and you keep going.
That's right.
Awesome. That's
right. All right, so let's get to our interview. We have with us today Jimmy Filangieri. He is the host of the Clearing the Bases podcast and runs the Evolution Baseball out of New York, just north of New York City. And what you'll hear next is our interview with Jimmy. Well, today we have Jimmy Filangieri with us, and Jimmy is the host of the Clearing the Bases podcast, which is what I know him from, because I am a loyal listener, and he is also on the ABCA Youth Baseball Organization Committee and runs the Evolution Baseball Club just north of New York City. So, Jimmy, it's great to have you today.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm honored and happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, thanks for carving out some time out of your busy schedule to be with us. We'd love to kind of get a background on like your whole story and kind of how you got to where you are now. I know you have a highly successful podcast, Clearing the Bases. You've coached a lot. I mean, just looking at your resume, you were all over the place. So I'd love to kind of hear a little bit more about your story.
It's an interesting story to tell you the truth. And I'm going to try and keep it as short as possible. So, believe it or not, most baseball coaches have played some form of high-level baseball. I did not, okay? I stopped playing baseball when I was a freshman in high school. Again, it had nothing to do with getting cut or any of that stuff. There are other reasons why I couldn't play anymore, so stopped playing then. And that was pretty much it, but I never really lost my love for the game. So I would say, well, I know it was 1983. I got the opportunity to coach. I was very young. I was 21 in 83, and I started coaching. So it was a disaster, like you can imagine. I thought I knew what I was doing, and I did it for, maybe like 3 years or so, and then I stopped. Well, fast forward to when my son was born, I said, you know what? I'm going to do this again. Right. But this time I'm going to do it right. So I did what I had to do. I did my, my studying and learning and all of this stuff and just kept going and really just looked at it like, I guess I would say I had a goal of being like a volunteer rec coach or maybe a travel ball coach. So, I just kept going and going and going. And one thing led to another, to another, to another. Next thing you know, I'm the head JV coach at Stepanak High School, and I stayed there for 6 years. Then I went on to Lourdes High School. I became their varsity head coach, was running my own program. And, now I started the Evolution Baseball, and here we are.
Nice. Evolution Baseball, I'm assuming it's travel ball, so tournament ball. What ages do you coach?
Right now, it's primarily 7th and 8th graders. We have one 6th grader, so it's 12, 13, and we do have the one 11-year-old. But you know something, Josh? I explain it this way. I don't like to call it a travel program.
Sure.
Because I really don't feel like it is. One of my pet peeves has always been as a coach that the travel organizations, most of them, not all of them, do not train their players. The boys are not learning how to play the game. So I like to look at Evolution Baseball like it's a baseball school.
Oh, I like that.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, it's very similar like what we run. So a little bit of our backstory. So me and my wife, we own Performance Baseball, which is a travel tournament organization. So we have 11 teams right now from 9U all the way up to 15U. So we're all the way up. Adam, you coach 9 and 11-year-olds and 14-year-olds right now. Our big program is we try to fill in all the skill developments. Previous episodes, we talked to some high school coaches and they were like, yeah, kids are coming to high school and they don't know how to play the game. They know how to bunt. They don't know how to do hit and runs. They're just going to go and try to just hit the ball, And the biggest thing is we want to give the kids resources. We want to make sure that they're developing, that they're learning the game. A lot of it is making sure that we have good volunteer coaches too, like Adam. I mean, I don't know how you manage to coach two teams. I coach one, but Adam coaches two teams. But
yeah,
I love that you say that because I do feel like travel ball sometimes has a great rep, and then sometimes there can be like kind of a negative aspect to it. I understand that.
Well, and,
go ahead.
Sorry, I moved up here from Dallas about 3 years ago, and found performance a couple of years ago, a couple of years ago. And you know, Dallas is a big, huge market. There's a lot of baseball there. To me, it's chaos. There's U-SSSA, there's Perfect Game, there's NCS, there's TB, there's all of these different sanctioning organizations, and they're all competing for resources. And then you've got two primarily big organizations in like the Dallas Patriots and the Dallas Tigers, and then you've got dozens of other ones. And my son played AAA kind of all the way up until high school. And we were paying significantly more than what we are paying now and getting nothing for it. Like, we were just paying for the name on the jersey. And like, even if we wanted to schedule indoor facility use time or field time, like, that was extra. We were getting no training from the any of their paid pro coaches, and the setup here at Performance, which is why I believe in this program and in helping do this podcast and all that, is just amazing. And like, they've got their paid coaches involved who are very knowledgeable, very good coaches. And they run these skill nights on Mondays and Wednesdays, in addition to all of the practice time. We get unlimited cage usage, indoor facility practice time and outdoor facility practice time. I love the program. And I think I've already seen a lot of development just in my two boys, over the last year. And so I'm all in.
Well, my biggest problem, what I've seen over the years is, and I'll just to give you an idea, like, in this area, there's a local, I guess you call it league, that, you know, all of the travel teams go in and they play each other in this league. Well, I went through and I looked at the teams. There's 680 teams in that league in the summer. 680. Okay. Now, it covers a big area, so I don't want to make it sound like it's very local, but it covers a decent area, but not enough for 680 teams. Okay. There are not enough qualified baseball coaches to coach that many players. And my biggest pet peeve over the years has been that if you're going to coach, I don't care if you're a volunteer coach or you're getting paid a stipend or whatever it is, you have an obligation to educate yourself, to learn, to be able to help those kids. And I'm seeing that most of the time, again, I don't want to paint with a broad brush. It's not happening.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a huge league. So, I mean, like, I just kind of scrolled through your Instagram a while ago, and I think it was September, you kind of posted about, like, it kind of like alluded to like bringing back like the professionalism in, you know, in youth sports, and like how it's kind of gone toxic. So, I mean, what are you noticing over on the East Coast in terms of like the travel organizations and like all that, like, how, if you were to kind of create a better culture for it, and it seems like you've done it with your program, or at least, you know, making a footprint with your program, how would you kind of turn around travel baseball?
Well, I mean, you know, we, with the ABCA Youth Committee, we do a youth summit every year. As a matter of fact, I'm getting ready to go in another 3 or 4 weeks. So we're heading down to Austin. But and we brainstorm about this very thing. You know, how do we help? How do we, get coaches so that they're better equipped, they're better prepared to teach players, okay? And it all starts with coaches' education. There's no doubt about it that, you know, we have to find a way for coaches to be educated. And it doesn't have to be at the level, you know, that I've been educated, or, you know, high school coaches, college coaches. It doesn't have to be that level, but it has to be at some level that's beneficial to the boys. Okay. So we have to find a way, and it's very hard to mandate it, but we have to find a way to mandate it so that every coach that steps in that dugout has at least a base level of knowledge on what they're doing. And, you know, it could be simple things like, you know, base running, like you guys had mentioned before, bunting. My God, you know, it's a mess. You see kids come up to the high school level and you got 30 kids and there's not one of them that knows how to square and bunt a baseball. How could that be?
Yeah.
So
it's true.
And let's face it, you guys are baseball guys. How hard is it to square and bunt a baseball?
Right.
It's really not that hard.
Right? There's like a few key things that you want to know, but yeah, like yeah, it's not that hard.
Catch the ball with the barrel and just put it in play.
Yeah. Bend your knees. Yeah. Don't drop the bat head. Yeah. Keep it out in front of you, eyes level with the barrel. Yeah, like yeah. That's it.
Right. That's it, right? And just do your reps. So,
yeah.
My understanding is, and I'm finding this out through Evolution Baseball, because, you know, the parents are sitting there and they're watching the practice, and you could see it. Their mouths are wide open. They're like, we've never seen anything like this before. And I'm like, well, this is a regular baseball. I'm not doing this. It's not brain surgery. It's a regular baseball practice. No, you know, I said, right. You know, and I'll ask them, like, what did the other teams that they played on the travel ball go? Well, they'd hit them some ground balls. They'd do a couple double plays, a little fly balls. Then they would do on-field batting practice, which you guys know is a mess, especially with younger kids.
Yes.
And that was their practice. And I'm like, oh, my God. No wonder why they're not learning anything.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The on-field batting practice is the worst because you've got one kid pitching, one kid hitting, and everybody else just standing around doing nothing.
And teams, it's only 10, 11, 12 players. So then you have, what, five people in left field, no one in right field. And it's like, well, yeah. Where is everyone?
Yeah.
What in the world? it's more hassle than what it's worth, I feel like.
So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, Jimmy, was – your story is just very similar to mine. I also did not play at a high level and got into coaching when my boys were really young and wanted to become, you know, the best rec coach I could and kind of eventually felt like I was hitting a ceiling with that and decided to, you know, get into the foray of travel ball. But like you, I read all the books I could get my hands on when it came to coaching. I watched the YouTube videos. I listened to every single podcast I possibly could. I took notes and tried to be as organized as possible when it came to practice planning and things like that. So it seems to me like we need some kind of certification process where, you know, maybe there's different levels of it. Even like you're an A-level certified coach, that means you can coach travel ball. You're a C level, that means you coach the T-ball teams, you know, and until you can reach a higher level, then you have no business coaching. Like we need to have some standards. I think you're right about that.
Well, here's the problem with it. And, you know, I've talked to many, many people about this. Here's the problem, especially at the rec level, volunteer coaches. Okay. If you start mandating that they, you know, take courses and they do all of this stuff, if you start mandating that, then a lot of guys are going to drop out.
Yeah.
Okay. Because they say, I'm not doing that. But Peter Caliendo, who has become a very good friend of mine, he said to me, Jim, but those are the guys that you really don't want them, because those are the guys that think that they know everything and they don't need to take those courses. So you want to get them out. Yeah, and I mean, I get that, but then what do you do when you don't have the coaches? Then you're going to have problems, okay? But I believe at the travel ball level, you take, you know, because you guys have heard I really don't like to use this term, but you guys have heard the term daddy ball, okay?
Yeah, oh so, yeah.
A lot of travel teams, a dad gets a bunch of kids together, he puts them on the field, and they're not learning anything, okay? Well, if tournament directors said, okay, if you're going to play in my tournament, you have to have completed, I don't care if it's USA baseball, C level, B level, A level, whichever it is, and give us the certificate that you completed this, and then you can come in a tournament. Now, what that'll do is that'll take these quote unquote dad coaches, and it'll make them have to have a basic level of knowledge if they want to play in a tournament. And if they don't get it, they can't play. They don't have a team.
Man, I think that'd be a great way to kind of get rid of the daddy ball. Because, I mean, yeah, Daddy Ball, it's not a bad, like, when you think of Daddy Ball, I mean, it's just dad coaches, but where it gets in the bad situation is when you start playing little Johnny, their son, at shortstop the whole game, and then no one's learning anything, and now it all surrounds around the coach's kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, certification would be awesome, but, like, man, I think that would just be so hard to, because there's just so many teams. Like you said, your league, how many teams are in that league?
There were 680 teams this past summer. 680. Yeah.
Could you imagine forcing 680 coaches to go through that certification?
Well,
crazy.
I think about it from like, I don't know. Baseball is such a technical sport that, like, soccer, okay, it's a ball. There's a goal. You go kick it in the goal. And, like, the level of expertise, it does not have to be that high. If you want to teach kids to play soccer, you can literally just put a soccer ball on the field and say, go kick the ball into that goal. And you do that enough times per week, you're going to get better at it. You're going to, and yeah, you can learn some technical drills along the way, but it's not super technical. It's athleticism. With baseball, there's so much technical aspects to it as it is with football. And, you know, football, at least around here in Oklahoma, is king. And we got OU Texas tomorrow. So but you show up to these youth football practices and they've got 10 coaches who all know what they're doing. And you've got one coaching special teams and one and two, you got a defensive line coach and an offensive coordinator. Like, you've got all these coaches who actually, like, know a thing or two about football. And that's also not a super technical sport either. Like, there are a lot of things to learn, but when it comes to technique, there are a few things. And again, I think it's nowhere near what baseball is. I don't know. I am a believer in high expectations producing better results. Like, if we have higher expectations, that's the way it is for my boys too, right? Like, if I have low expectations for them, then I'm going to get low results.
Yeah. And, you know, a big part of what you were just saying is that baseball is so much more of a mental game than the other games are. Okay. So, you know, when we're coaching, it's a totally different. In other words, if you watch a football game, you watch a basketball game, what are the coaches doing? You see them screaming at guys, okay? They're you know, they're yelling. If you do that in baseball, that's counterproductive. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's a different way of coaching where we need, and I always say this, we coach the person first before we coach the player. Because we have to get that person thinking the right way. And then if he has athletic ability, then, you know, the rest will kind of take care of itself, I believe. So I lost my train of thought.
Well, yeah, I mean, to your point, I was we were throwing bullpens with my 9U boys last night. And bullpens are a new thing for them. This is our first year in kid pitch. And I was trying to, you know, keep them all engaged. There are kind of two approaches. So, like, we decided to break all of our boys up into groups, and we had three groups hitting while we had one group working bullpens. And so I had three boys in my group per rotation. And I could either have all three kind of working on the same mechanics and same cues at the same time, or I could take each one individually and work individually. And I've done it both ways. I've done the, all right, let's just get the basics down. But last night I decided what I'm going to do is I'm going to have one pitching, one charting pitches, and one working on pickoff moves. And so I quickly showed here's an A move and a B move. Slow feet, slow hands is your B move. A move is fast feet, fast hands. Just go throw into the net over there. Just work on your footwork. And then with the kid on the mound, every kid's different. Like, every kid's mechanics are going to be slightly different. This one kid is, you know, getting on the side of the ball, and another kid is not finishing the way he should. Another kid doesn't quite get the balance point the way he should. Like, every kid is different.
Yep. Oh, there's no doubt. And, you know, again, another thing that we talk about all the time is, you know, trying to cookie cut players with your instruction. You cannot cookie cut players. I mean, you know, there are some players that, in my estimation, are short-arming the ball when they're throwing, okay? But he's effective. He's using his body. He's not putting, in my opinion, any stress on that arm. Why am I going to fool with that? Leave him alone, okay, and work with what he's doing. Same thing with hitters. You know, everybody's trying to make hitters. There's only a couple of things you need to do with hitting, okay, as far as I'm concerned. The rest, however you do it, is up to you. And, you know, your head can't move. You have to stay on top of the baseball. You have to stay behind the baseball. And your hips have to initiate the swing. That's it. How you do that, I really don't care. I'm not going to make every single kid get in there and do the same damn thing, because then it's not going to work. You're going to make maybe some players better, but you're going to make players worse also by doing that. So to your point, yeah, you got to let them go.
Yeah, exactly. Hitting's that pivotal thing where it's, as long as you get to your launch position, like everyone gets to the same spot. You look at little leaguers, you look all the way to big leaguers. Everyone gets to the same spot. And the, I mean, their turn should, we should be coaching them on their turn to the ball, you know, like hips first, staying behind the ball, all that stuff. But like everyone gets to the same spot, or should. That's really what you're working on. Yeah, again, to prove your point, like it doesn't matter what you do before that. It does not matter. I don't care if you stand at Craig Council with your hands 10 feet in the air, you know, up the bat, or Euclid where your hands halfway up the barrel. You know, it does not matter. It does not matter as long as you get to the ball.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll tell you, like, I'm not a big fan of the open stance. I hate it because I look at it when you're open, there is absolutely no way that you can land every single time and be back square again. So I don't like it. But there are some players that have proved to me that they could start open and that they could be successful. Well, let's leave them alone. I'm not going to make him do something he's not comfortable doing.
Yeah. Now, if something's wrong, then maybe we can go in and say, well, it might be the open stance that's doing it to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if the results aren't there. Yeah.
But like you said, you know, if somebody's doing something wrong, so let's say a kid is dropping his hands, okay, which we know we can't let him do that, okay? So, but there are simple drills that you put him on, you work him through the drills, and if you do it the right way, next thing you know, he's not dropping his hands anymore because now his body has been trained to move a certain way, and that's it.
Yeah. So going back to like your practice planning, when you said like parents, their jaw drops when they attend your practices, what's kind of the distinguishing factor that you've heard or you've noticed that sets your practices apart from like other teams that they've been on or anything like that? Is there something special that you love just like planning around, or what does your typical practice look like?
Well, I mean, it's not like I'm doing anything that's brain surgery. You know, it's stuff that you guys probably all, you know, you guys know. But the problem is, again, we'll go back to travel ball coaches because they're not educated. They don't know how to, you know, they don't know how to put a practice together. So, like, if you come to my practice, and again, these are seventh and eighth graders right now. I'm not even talking about my high school players. So the seventh and eighth grade guys, as soon as we get there, the first thing they do is we teach them meditation, okay? Now, we'll go through the meditation with them. And again, is it as complex as we do at the high school? No. It's for them, it's more like just relax, lay down, close your eyes, and just, you know, relax your mind, relax your body. And that's pretty much it. I don't get much more into it than that.
Get into a good headspace. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm not going to, like, you know, like with the high school guys, I'll walk around and I'll do a guided meditation with them where I'll actually talk as they're, you know, as they're relaxing and try and get their mind in the right place and get them to do some visualization and stuff like that. But I believe, you know, that that's an important thing that we need to at least introduce to those players because that's what they should be doing. Okay. So we'll do that. Then we do our stretching. You know, we'll do some running first, do our stretching. Then again, most important part of practice, and you guys know this, is catch play.
Okay. Yep.
Gosh, I got a nice time for catch play. Gosh, it took 30 minutes for my guys to get through catch play. It felt like they were playing fetch instead of catch. It's like, guys, you know how many reps you're leaving on the table. Did you get better playing catch? No. Like, play catch with a purpose.
Yes.
Literally had that conversation last night.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if you, and again, I've seen it, you know, you see the opposing team, you're playing, you know, in a game, a tournament, whatever, and you see the opposing team, the boys are doing their catch play, and the coaches are like over by the dugout, they're talking to mom and dad or whatever. They're not paying attention to what those kids are doing. When we're doing our catch play, number one, we have a routine that we go through. Okay, that's number one. Number two, all of the coaches are walking throughout the players. And if you're not moving your feet, if you're not centering the ball, if you're not receiving the ball, we're on you. We're on you, because to me, that's the most important part of practice. So then we'll do that. And then we'll do our skill sets. And, you know, then it depends on the day. Sometimes, you know, we have guys hitting off a tee into a bow net, and there'll be several different stations at the same time. Maybe a couple of guys are working double plays, and other guys are working picks at first base. Outfielders are working on drop steps. You know, there's all different things that are going on. And it all depends on how many coaches I have there also. So.
Yes. Yes.
And that's what a typical practice looks like.
Awesome. Yeah, small group work is so pivotal. But it does depend on how many coaches are there. It really depends on how many coaches are there.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not hard, I think, from a youth travel ball perspective, to enlist a parent or two, give them some instructions, or even come prepared with a little, you know, printout. You can print out some instructions. Say, here's the drill. Do it. You know, make like on the drop step, like start up close and just have them take one step back and then start working over their shoulder more, you know? Yeah. And it's not hard to teach a parent how to run a drill like that and involve them.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, I'd like to kind of switch gears a little bit. That's okay.
Yeah.
So I know you're the head of Clearing the Bases podcast. How many episodes are you on right now?
I believe we're somewhere between 115 and 120.
That's awesome. So highly successful. Very, you know, great stuff. I've listened to some of your episodes. I know Adam listened to your episodes as well. What's kind of your goal behind Clearing the Bases, and why did you start that?
Oh, my God. Okay, so I started out with no goal. I started out not even wanting to do it. I'm trying to think, we're like 4.5 years into it, going on to our fifth year. I say mine. We were at a tournament, and at the hotel that night, you know, all of the parents were sitting around having a couple of beers or whatever they were doing. And I stopped by and I sat down and I was talking, and one of the parents said to me, "Jim, you got to do a podcast." And I looked at him and I said, "You're out of your mind. I am not doing a podcast. It's not happening." Right. So he goes, no, come on. You got to do it, this and that. And I said, nobody's going to want to listen to me talk about baseball. It's just not going to happen. Forget it. So the next day, or maybe a couple of days later, I get an email from him. "So go out and buy this microphone, use this program, do this. This is how you do it." He gave me the whole thing. Right.
This sounds similar to our conversation, Josh.
Right? So I called him up and I said, "What part of 'I'm not doing this' did you not understand?" I said, "I'm not doing it." So at the time, I was taking mental performance classes, and I was going once a week, and it was a Zoom class. And Jonathan, who was teaching me, what's that?
Who was it through? What was the performance coaching through? Like Brian Kane, or was it what organization?
No. It's a guy who became a very good friend of mine. His name is Jonathan Reinbold. And it was through the ABCA. It was funny because he posted something on their forum and said, anybody that wants to take mental performance classes, because he needed to do it in order to get his certification. He had to teach so many hours. So I said, you know what? I would love to learn the right way to teach this. So I did. And anyway, Jonathan and I we're very, very good friends now. But anyway, so I told him about this. So he goes, "Well, you're going to do it." So I said, "You're just as bad as he is." He said, "I don't want to do this." So he said, "Nope." He said, "We're going to make this part of your training. You're going to learn how to set process goals, outcome goals, da, 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 da." So I said, "All right, whatever." So we went through it. We were supposed to release in September. I blew right through that because I didn't want to do it. And finally, around March, He said, okay, you're ready. Release your episode. And I figured that I would release it and that would be the end of it. You know, like maybe 2, 3, 4 shows, whatever. And that would be the end of it. And that's the way I looked at it. Well, here we are almost 5 years later. And you guys have seen the guests I have. I would say that most of the people that I've had on a show have now become friends. Just an amazing ride and an amazing experience. And I've become a much, much better coach because of those people.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Is there any like episodes that really stand out? I mean, obviously, you know, I'm talking about, you know, one person over the other, but is there anything that like stands out after the 5 years? Like, I mean, it sounds like it helped you establish goals. It helped you kind of work through processes, becoming a better coach. Is there anything that like kind of stands out to you? If you were like, wow, this was the one thing that really has impacted me. Was there anything?
Yeah. The one thing that I will say is that it hammered home what's something that I believed. But it really hammered home how important relationships are, that, you know, you build these relationships and they don't have to be, you know, something like, in other words, a lot of the coaches that I now interact with, maybe we talk 2-3 times a year. That's about it. But every now and then, you know, I'll pick up the phone and I'll text one of them. Hey, bud, just thinking about you. How are you? You know, and that happens time and time and time again. And anytime I had a problem that I was dealing with a few weeks ago, actually it was a few months ago, baseball wise. And I reached out to Sheets and I said to him, hey, you got a few minutes to talk? And he said, yeah. He said, call me whenever you want. So, okay. So I called him, went over, and he guided me and gave me advice. And, you know, that type of thing, you know, that has come from that show is just, it's priceless.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. I think when I started talking to Josh about doing a podcast, my hope was that it would make me a better coach. Like that was the idea. It was not like, oh, I have all of this wisdom and expertise that I just think the world needs to know. And it was more like, again, I'm taking a lifelong learner approach to this of like, this is an opportunity for me to have an excuse to talk to guys like you, to talk to other, you know, high school baseball coaches. You know, I think kind of at that time I was like, what is it that high school coaches are looking for so I can know how to prepare my son for that level? And I bet there are other parents who have those same kind of questions. And so that's kind of where I came from of, you know, wanting to have that information.
But yeah, I mean, all of that and more, you know, have come from this that, again, I'll use, and I kind of feel like I'm dropping names, but I don't mean to do that. I'm doing this just to, you know, emphasize, you know, what it has done for me. Again, you guys know who Steve Springer is. Mm-hmm. Okay. Steve has become a very good friend to the point now where, you know, like when I first spoke to him, I was like, oh my God, this is Steve Springer. You know, it's like, you know, hey coach, how are you? You know, you think that maybe you'd like to come on the show, you know, and this, and now like the phone will ring, it'll be Springer. Hey Spring, what's up?
That's awesome.
You know, it's become that type of relationship. Yeah. And none of that is possible without my podcast. None of it.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. And how did you kind of get into the ABCA and getting into the committee for youth baseball? How'd you go down that road?
That was being in the right place at the right time. So, you know, years ago, I became a member of the ABCA because I realized that, you know, there's so much stuff there. Are you guys members?
Yes.
Not yet.
I am. Well, Josh, I've read a couple of your articles in the Inside Pitch. Come on, Josh.
Josh, I'm going to tell you right now, okay, when we get off here, I'm going to email you the code. You're going to go in and you're going to sign up and you're going to join, okay? And if you don't, because I'll know, because I'll look through it and I'll find you, I will come to Oklahoma and get you if I have to. There's so much good stuff there for educational purposes. Like when you go to a convention, all of the You know, all of the presentations, the videos are all on the website. You can go there and it'll tell you, you know, what the presenter was talking about. So if you want a bunch of good ideas for, I don't know, maybe a hitting program you're going to do with your facility, you could go on there and watch these things and help you to get some information. So I'm telling you, I'm going to hunt you down. You got to do it.
I got it. Sounds good. So you mentioned that you have a summit that's going to Austin. Can you speak a little bit more about that? What's the summit going to be like?
Yeah, well, let me back up a little bit just to give you an idea of how I got on that committee. So
yeah, absolutely.
From being involved with the ABCA, I wanted to get, because my podcast is geared towards youth baseball, so I wanted to get Rob Haney, who is the chairman of the youth committee and the travel committee for the ABCA. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, Rob, you know, I want to get you on the show and da 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 da. So, oh, I know what it was. No. I was recording from the convention. So I said, I'm going to be there. I want to get you on while I'm there. So he said, I'm going to be in this presentation at such and such time. Come and see me. So I said, okay. I went in. We said hello. I'm telling you guys, this took about 5 minutes, right? And, you know, we shook hands. Good and nice to meet you. Good to meet, you know, put a face with the name, da 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 da. And he says, listen, he said, we're doing a youth summit. Do you want to be part of it? And I said, yeah, of course I do. And that's how it happened. So I did the summit and then became part of the committee.
That's awesome. Yeah, in that email with that code for the ABCA, might as well drop in like the link to registration for the summit. We'd love to support you, and we could throw it in our show notes for a listener.
Oh, that would be great.
We'll attend it. But, I mean, Austin's not terribly far from here, so it's not too far from us.
Yeah. Awesome. It's great. I mean, you know, the first year it was hosted by the Kansas City Royals. Last year it was hosted by, I can't remember the name of the company, but they hosted it in Augusta, Georgia, and we went there. It was beautiful what they did for us. It was fantastic. This year, University of Texas is hosting us, so we're going to Austin, and, you know, we'll be there. And it's, you know, maybe about 30 or 40 of us, and is all it is. It's 2 or 3 days of just brainstorming. That's what it is.
Awesome. Are you leading any of it? Is it sessions? Like, what does the summit actually look like? I know you said brainstorming, but is there actual sessions? Is there a, you know, speaker? What's going on with that?
Everything. What you just said. Yeah. Now, believe it or not, last year one of the main speakers that was there was from the, and I forget the exact organization, but it was a youth tennis organization. Okay, and they took tennis and they were able to bring it back to where it's running efficiently, and you know, it's running the way it should be running. Very, very powerful presentation he gave. So it was, you know, that type of thing. We'll also break up into groups like we did last year. We broke up into, and I gotta try and remember, my group was how do we reach coaches to coach the coaches. Another one was how do we reach parents so that we could teach parents how to you know, how to better support youth baseball instead of all of these fights and all this crap that goes on. So there were all different groups. I can't remember what the others, and we came up with actionable items that, you know, as the years go by, we're going to start implementing.
That's awesome.
That's cool. Yeah, I think that was part of our motivation too, was in the coaching the coaches. It was somewhat internal of like, we wanted to provide some sort of resource to our other performance coaches that would help them spark conversation, help them figure out, you know, some other things that they could do for practice planning and so on and so forth. And it started as, yeah, just kind of an internal desire to help support the 11 teams that we've got. And we found out, what was it, last week, that we've got listeners in Melbourne, Australia, and you know, all over the world. Yes. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Oh, believe me. No, I'm sorry, Josh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, go for it.
The first time I saw that, I had like a listener from, I don't know, Sri Lanka or Namibia in Africa. I was like, what the hell is going on here?
Crazy.
It's amazing.
When you start seeing the breakdown, you're like, oh my gosh. the impacts that, you know, as small as our podcast is, or, you know, as big as whatever, it's crazy the reach that you can possibly have with your voice. And it, I think it just goes to show, like, coaching is such a big thing in the community. And I mean, just by using your voice, like, you could reach a lot of people. You'd either positively impact people or you could negatively impact people. So it's awesome.
Okay, so I do have a question for you. Again, kind of going back to you know, why I got into this, but what do youth coaches like myself need to do to prepare their players for high school baseball?
Oh my God, it's something like we've kind of been talking about it the whole, you know, the whole show. It's rudiments. It's the rudiments of the game. Okay, don't worry about teaching them how to do double cuts. Don't worry about how to teach them how to do first and thirds. You know, you got to work on bunt defenses a little bit with youth players, but I feel like leave that stuff up to us, because we're probably going to do it our own way. Okay. Well, double cuts might, you know, be similar to what everybody else does. But what I'm seeing is, like, you know, kids, if they run down to first base, they don't know to step on the front of the bag. They step right in the middle of the bag. Teach them that. It takes 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, leads off of first base, you know, how your feet are supposed to be placed when you're taking your lead off of first base. It's simple. Teach it to them. Okay. How to take leads off of second base, how to take a walking lead off of third base, looking for reading dirt balls, you know, the angle of the ball there, all of those basic little simple things that another big thing, as a matter of fact, they just had a discussion with one of my coaches about this is, you know, when young kids field ground balls, nobody ever taught them that your fingers go point down. When, you know, your fingers should be pointing down. You shouldn't be laying the glove flat on its back on the ground to field a ball, right? So we do a drill, and I don't know if you guys might be familiar with it. It's called tap backs. It's a very simple drill. You bounce a ball to the player. The player doesn't have a glove, and he just takes his glove hand, and he's got the – can you see the way I'm
– Yeah, yeah, palm out, facing the ball.
And he just taps it back to you and just do it. And one of my coaches came over and I said, what the hell are you doing? So I said, you know, they need to know this, because if we don't do this and get them used to feeling that, then what's going to happen is they're going to get under, you're going to hit them a ground ball, they're going to lay the back of the glove right down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. 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 It's been happening with my 9U team lately. A couple of my players have been doing that exact thing of having their palm, the back of their hand facing the ground instead of fingers to the ground. And it's like, okay, we got to go rewind here, get back to the basics of, yeah, that, like the old little pancake mitts or whatever, all those little things.
Yeah, so I mean, you do that with 5 minutes with the kids. It doesn't take a lot of time. 5 minutes, give me a few tap backs. Do it every day for, you know, the length of the season. Believe me, by the time that season is over, that's going to be automatic that they're going to have that hinge. Outfielders, okay, another pet peeve of mine is drives me crazy, okay. Nobody ever taught them that their first step is back, okay? Nobody ever taught them. Nobody ever taught them how to get around the baseball and move back towards the infield when you – it's very simple to do. There are many, many drills that you can do that will help the kids to learn that. And once they feel it, like I know me, when I get kids, you know, they're fumbling around out there. They're moving in on a ball that goes 10 feet over their head, you know. But when they get it and you start seeing them taking the right route – I'm beaming, you know, I'm like, wow, look at this. This is great. Absolutely. You know?
Yeah. Teach them. Getting behind the baseball, especially those ones hit right at you, is I feel like it's such a hard skill to learn. Like it just takes reps and reps and reps.
Yep.
And yes. And you're right. That first step being back. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I tell my outfielders when I'm working with them is I don't care if you don't get to the ball in practice. I really don't care, okay? But I care that you're taking the right route. Eventually, you will understand how much you can go back and, you know, be able to recover. You'll eventually figure that out. But I want to see you moving that way, okay? And if you don't get to the ball, I don't care. You know, eventually, you're going to. But if you want them to make every single catch and you make them afraid to do what you want them to do and they get locked up because they're fearful, then what good is that?
Yeah.
I do have one more pet peeve, if you let me.
Yeah, yeah, go for it. Go for it.
I got to go to hitters, okay? When I get hitters, you know, even at the high school level, nobody ever taught these guys that the contact point is not 2 feet out in front of the plate. And
yes.
Right? Everybody's reaching for the baseball. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Well, and then
that misconception of people just yelling like, hey, catch the ball out in front, catch the ball, you know, hit the ball out in front. It's like, well, no, you're not strong in that spot. You know, like if you get a simple turn to contact with your elbows kind of bent, you know, kind of creating a box with your arms, you push on the barrel, they're able to hold that barrel. But as soon as they start reaching out front 2 feet, you start pushing that barrel's all over the place.
And they're long, they get long in the backside too. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Everything, you know, that is bad. And so what I'll do is I'll take them at the high school level and we'll set them up on a tee and I'll put the tee, you know, just a little bit off their front hip, maybe like 6 inches in front of their hip. No stride, okay, is all we do is just a little load with your hands and then go. And we do that over and over and over. And you'd be surprised. Then they learn.
Are you telling, are you telling them to hit it straight back up the middle or to pull it or? What?
No. Straight back, right through the pitcher's forehead is what I tell him.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a point, you know, with drills where you want to put the tee out in front just to give them the feel, like staying inside the ball. But yeah, contact point. All right. Do you have any other pet peeves? I love these. Any other pet peeves? Let's hear it.
If I think about it, rundowns. Okay. Rundowns another thing. Okay. So you get them at the high school level, 15, 16, 17. And they're doing rundowns, and they got the ball, and they're doing this with the ball. Okay.
Oh,
and
receiver.
What's that?
You know how scary that is as a receiver on the receiving end of that. Someone just pump faking you with the ball over and over and over. Are you throwing it?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That and the fact that they don't understand that you don't dance with the runner; that it's a full-out sprint.
Yeah.
Okay. Force him to make a move. And, you know, they're doing this and they're dancing and the guy's going back. And I'm like ready to like, I that's why I don't have any hair because I pulled it all out.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. That's funny. I think another pet peeve, like I'll just get one, is like batters up to bat. And then you see the batter take a strike right down the middle. And little Johnny's mom yells, oh, now you see it. Like, no, you should have jumped on that pitch. You should have saw it in the batter, you know, on that circle.
No, you didn't see it.
You should have seen it. You knew he was throwing first pitch fastballs. Jump on it. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you've seen one.
Yeah. Or the other thing that I'm sure you guys have heard, you know, throw strikes when there's a pitcher on the mound. Johnny, just throw strikes.
Obviously.
What the hell do you think he's trying to do?
Yes. Oh gosh. All right. So same question, but for players, what do players need to do to prepare for high school ball?
Ooh. Okay. That's an easy one. Okay. Nowadays players have to prepare themselves mentally. Okay. So we talked about, you know, me taking mental performance classes because I needed to take them so that I could teach it to my players. Okay. Players need to get the, they have, you know, their approach is no good. They don't know how to fail. They don't know anything about accountability. They need to do that. They need to learn how to be mentally prepared for each game. And we don't see at the high school level, we don't have enough time to teach them, you know, to do that. I only get them for like 3 months and the season is over. It's not enough time. And again, this is part of mental performance, but effort and attitude. They need to know that I can't tell you how many times in a tryout I've had to call everybody in and say, guys, do you understand that like you're trying to impress me?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You're walking. What?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where like last night, so yesterday's practice with the play catch. There was another interview and I forget. But it was, they were talking about like day one of tryouts. They'll say, okay, cool. All right, guys, thanks for being here. Go warm up. And they'll just sit back. And it's like that coach literally stated, I could cut probably 10 to 20 kids right off the bat because of how they play catch or how they hold themselves or whatever. You know, it's just like people don't realize that there's eyes on you at all times. If you don't play high school ball, you have to know that once you step foot on the grass, once you step across that line, you need to be full speed, full hustle, 120,000%, you know, like go for it. And that starts with, you know, the small things. It's all about small things.
Yep. I have, I took a kid once at a tryout who did not give max effort and didn't have the best attitude, but he had a great arm. And I was like, well, maybe I can help his attitude and his effort. We could work on those things, because the arm, you know, the talent was there, and it was a mistake. Yeah. You know, it was a problem all the time. And now that kid did have some of his own issues and demons to deal with, and like still care for him as an individual. But like, it got to a point where it was like, this is not working. Yeah.
No, it's tough. And I can tell you a story. And if any of my players listen to this show, they're going to say, oh, here he goes again. So I had a player, arguably the best player, best talented player that I've ever coached. As a matter of fact, he committed to Ole Miss. So anyway, bad attitude, just didn't hustle, because all throughout his career, because he was so talented, everybody was blowing smoke up his butt. And, yep, you know, he thought he was the greatest thing on the face of the earth. Well, until he met me, and then, because I don't care, all right? So we were getting ready. Now, when I was at Stepanak High School, our JV, we have playoffs. So we were getting ready for our first playoff game, and he wasn't hustling. So I pulled him on the side, and I said, what are you doing? I said, we're supposed to be getting ready for a playoff game tomorrow, and, you know, the boys are running. You're in the back of the pack. You're the fastest kid on the team. You should be out front. I said, I want to see you out front. Okay, coach. He goes, he stayed in the back. So I said, okay. And, you know, he didn't give me effort during practice. Not a problem. We get to that playoff game the next day, and he goes over and looks at the lineup card, and you should have seen his face. It just dropped. He wasn't on there. Okay. And his dad even went more ballistic than he did. And I told him, not on my watch. You either give me 100% effort or you're not playing. I don't care who you are.
Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, I said to myself, now remember when I had him, I think he was a freshman when I had him. So a couple of years later, he commits to Ole Miss, and I said, he's not going to last there. There's no way that Bianco is going to let him stay there on a team with that attitude. Well, he didn't even make it through the fall. It was last year. He didn't make it through the fall. He was like there 2 weeks, and the next thing you know, he was gone. Oh my gosh. You have to bring effort and a good attitude. Coaches don't give a crap how good you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I hate saying it, but there is a point. Like, I love every player I come in contact with. I love every family. I love them, but you're replaceable. I hate saying that. Like, I'm going to find another player that's going to be just as good with a better attitude, or may not be just as good, but he's going to have a better attitude. I'm going to be able to coach him up. You know, it stinks.
Yeah.
You know, it really stinks, but it's gotten to that point where, like, you have a bad attitude or you're not coachable, I'm sorry. Like, I can't have you on the squad. Yeah.
All right. One more iteration of that question. What do parents need to do to prepare themselves and their kids for high school baseball?
Can I say what I really mean? What if parents have to educate themselves also? Okay. They have to learn, we'll say, what proper protocol is. I mean, you know, we go through it in our parent meeting, and we tell them, and I'll be just as tough on parents as I am on players. I'll be honest with you. I have a little bit of an advantage there because I kind of have, like, because of my age, I have like that older brother or maybe like young uncle type feel to it, because I'm older than all of my parents are. But I'll police my parents. If you get out of line, I'll get on you just like I would a player, because the way I look at it is, if you're acting like an idiot, okay, you're embarrassing the organization, and you're embarrassing me, and you're embarrassing the players. So don't act like an idiot. Okay. I think that what parents need to do is, they need to find a coach, because a lot of the stuff that I see that happens with parents is they're complaining about coaches. You know, I don't like this coach. We left this organization, went there because that coach was an idiot. This. Do your homework if you're a parent. find, you know, to stop all of that nonsense, find somebody you trust. You know, go to practice, watch how he practices, watch how he performs during games. Is he screaming at kids? Is he doing this? That's your obligation as a parent to do that work, to make sure that you're putting your kid in the right place. Don't complain about it after you made a mistake and make everybody's life miserable. And the other thing I would say to parents, stop giving your kids everything. Stop giving them $600 bats and $400. You know, he's playing whatever, a position on the field, and you say, all right, you're gonna pitch next inning, go in the bullpen and you know, go get loose. And kid, wait a minute, coach, I gotta go in the dugout, I gotta get my pitcher's glove. Well, he's got a infielder's glove, an outfielder's glove, a pitcher's glove. When I grew up, I had a glove. Yep. You know, don't give them everything. Make them want for something, make them work towards something, because it'll help them in the long run.
Yeah.
I think one of the hard lessons to learn, especially for parents today, is, okay, T-ball level, you've got 10 parents on the field with, you know, 10 kids, and they're all right there behind their kid, and that's acceptable. You know, it's fine. You move up a level, coach pitch, and now you've got, you know, maybe two coaches out in the field behind the outfield. And you got one in the right field, first base side, one in the third base side. And so we've stepped down a little bit, and we got more parents in the stands rather than on the field. Then you move up to kid pitch, and now it's, you know, one coach in the dugout, one at third base, one at first base, and all the parents are watching. And then by the time you get to high school, like, parents are way less involved and should learn to let go, I think, and let those coaches coach. And as we're moving through this process, you know, me as a youth coach, like, I want to over communicate and try and make sure everybody's staying in the loop. And I'm doing my best to have conversations with parents about playing time or whatever. Because I feel like that's part of my obligation as a travel baseball coach, is to try and just make sure that I am getting as much feedback as possible and communicating as best as possible. But at some point that diminishes. At some point, you know, that conversation with the head coach about playing time needs to run through the kid rather than through the parent. And you have to learn to let the kid lead.
Yeah. I mean, there's a great saying. Okay. So parents need to prepare their kids for the road ahead, not pave it for them. And that sums it up in a nutshell. Just, you know, give them encouragement, build them up, you know, help them, prepare them, let them know that, yes, you're going to have a ground ball hit to you. It's going to go between your legs and two guys are going to score and a team's going to lose because of that play. But let them know that there were probably many other plays earlier in the game that contributed to that loss. It wasn't that one play. It never is, right? Let them know that. Don't beat them up and say, oh, my God, if you didn't let that ball go through, you know what I mean? That type of thing. Just don't do that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Be encouraging. Be your kid's cheerleader.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's I can put, again, I'm a little bit older than you guys. You know, I played my little league baseball back in the 70s. Okay. My father never saw me swing a bat, nor could he tell you what end of the bat to hold. He had no clue. Okay.
Yeah.
He never came. The parents were not, you know, they threw the kids on the field. They said, go play. And what happened was the cream rise to the top. And that's the way it is. You know, some are better than others, period, the end. You cannot facilitate your son getting to a high level. He's got to do it, not you. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think one of the bad culture things in travel ball right now is that it definitely works both ways, right? it's select for from the standpoint of the coaches. The coaches select the kids that they want, but it works the other way too, where parents select the teams that they want. And, you know, if instead of looking at it like, oh, my kid's not getting the playing time at the position I want, what can they do to get better? What can they do to earn that playing time? Instead, it's, oh, we're just going to go find another team. And, and you change teams every single year. And so you're not building any sort of continuity with that coach or learning something over the long range. Now, I get there are times when it's a bad fit, or it's a bad coach, or it's a bad culture, or whatever. I get that. But what I see more often than not is like, where can I put my kid where he's going to get the playing time at the position without having to earn it?
Yes. Yeah. People are so quick to leave. I heard a saying, it was the grass. They always think the grass is greener, but little do they know the grass is greener above a septic system. You know, like, the grass is always greener, but I couldn't get above a septic, you know?
Like, I mean, it's so true.
Yeah, buy into a good coach. Like, if you like the coach, stick with it. Same with coaches. I think we hold such a big responsibility. Like, own up to what our role is. Like, bring these kids up. Make sure that they're set for manhood or womanhood or, you know, whatever you're coaching. Like, make sure that you're setting them up for long-term success.
We were hard on a kid last fall, and that he made a mistake. Mistakes happen. We tell him, here's the mistake that you made. Let's fix it and let's not do that again. Literally the next play, he has the same opportunity to make that same exact play and made the exact same mistake after we had just told him, you've got to hit your cutoff. That's all it was you got to hit your cutoff. If it gets past you, you got to hit your cutoff. And he got back in the dugout. We were frustrated with it. We're like, look, we just told you, you got to hit the cutoff. And, you know, whatever. We get to the end of that day. I get a text from the parent that night. Hey, I don't like the vibe. And we're quitting mid tournament.
Wow.
And
wow.
Yeah. I was like, so we can't hold your son accountable for, like, it's ridiculous.
Right. But here's the thing with that I'll say. Okay. And Josh, you kind of alluded to it before what you said. You have to let the players know that you love them and that you care about them, and let their parents need to know that you love them and you care about them also. And that'll minimize. I'm not saying it won't make that go away, but it'll minimize it, because they'll understand that it's coming from here, that it's not coming from here. One thing I always do, always, every team I've ever coached, I always tell my players that I love them, point blank, just like that. And I learned that from Butch Chaffin. And I'll tell you something, it was hard. It was hard to do. I mean, I might have felt it, and, you know, I would cut my arms off for those kids. But to make that come out of your mouth is very hard to say, I love you, bud. Okay. But the more you do it, the more, the easier it gets. And I'll tell you a quick story. So, you know, we were talking about before that I got let go from Lourdes. So there was a kid on the team that I had started coaching him when he was, I think it was 14 when I first coached him, maybe 13, whatever. And I hadn't coached him for a couple of years, but then I had him at Lourdes his sophomore, junior, and I was supposed to have him for his senior year. So anyway, when things went sideways, he calls me up. And let me tell you something, guys, I rode this kid like you can't imagine for all of those years that I coached him. I mean, I rode him hard, all right, because he was a kid that thought he knew everything, you know, would have a bad attitude, wouldn't listen, and I rode him hard. But after every time I'd go over and I'd put my arm around him and I'd say, hey, bud, I said, you're better than that. You know better. You're better than that. I love you to death, but I can't let you get away with it. So I have to do something. Come on. You know I love you. Okay. And that was it, right? I said to myself, this kid's going to graduate high school and he's going to walk away and say, thank God I'm away from that jackass. Right? So things go sideways and he calls me up and he says, hey, coach. He said, what happened? So I told him. So he said, wow. He goes, look, He said, I got to let you know something. He said, I owe everything that I am as a baseball player to you. Wow. Like that. I started crying. Okay. And I said to him, I said, are you serious? So he goes, yeah. He goes, I'm serious. I said, but I kicked you in your butt. I beat you up. I said, I did everything to you other than put you on the ground and strangle you. I said, you know, and you think, and he goes, coach, he said, I hated you. He said, for that. He said, all the way up until this summer. He said, when I was playing my travel ball, it started to click in my head what you were doing. He said, and I got it. He said, and now, you know, you're not going to be here anymore. He said, what are we going to do? He said, where are we going to find a coach that's going to love us and care for us as much as you do? I was crying like a 4-year-old.
Wow.
Wow.
All right. So my point is, and I'm not telling that story to the greatest coach in the world. It has nothing to do with it. It has to do with the fact is, even though I beat that kid up, he knew that I loved him. He knew it was coming from here. You know, that is so important, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And I think in our situation in particular last fall, like we were still a fairly new team. And I think that was part of it too, is like, you know, there is a balance between being hard on a kid and showing that you care. And yeah, you're exactly right.
You can do both. You can do both.
Yeah.
All right. You have to do the love and care before you beat them up, because they need to know that beforehand. But then you also have to do it afterwards to make them understand that you still love them and still care for them. And that is really, really powerful as a coach.
And that's really why we got into coaching in the first place.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it kind of goes back to that last, like earlier in this conversation, where you're talking about it's all about relationships, you know, like you need to make sure, like the key of a relationship is making sure that they know that you care for them. But like also, like you want the players to understand, like you want to also hear they care about you too. Like the fact that your player came back to you with that, gosh, that's what it's all about. That's
yeah,
all about, man.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I
was talking to him on the phone. I was actually driving. All right, and I didn't know how to like do whatever I had to do to not let him know that I had tears running down my face, because I almost couldn't talk.
Sniffling, ugly crying in the car.
Yeah.
Man.
So.
Man.
Well, that's pretty cool. I think that's a testament to your leadership and your coaching ability and yeah. So, kudos to you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I've got more questions that I could ask you, but I think we've probably gotten it done today for today. So we might just have to have you on again sometime.
Anytime, guys. This was a blast.
Absolutely. Well, awesome. Yeah, if you don't mind, shoot over an email with the ABCA sign up, and then also all the summit details, so we can help support you with that. I love the ABCA. I love everything that they stand for. I know I'm not a member yet, but I do really appreciate the organization as well.
We've been talking about like trying to grab a few of our coaches and head to the convention.
Yeah.
We
missed the Dallas one.
Yeah, I know, when it was right here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Last year was DC. This year is Columbus.
That's right. Yeah. Columbus. Yeah. Cool. But we might have to make that happen.
And that's the other thing too. Like next time it's in Dallas, you guys got to go so we can hang out and have a couple of beers.
That'd
Absolutely. Sounds good. Well, Jimmy, thank you so much for your time, man. It means so much to us and all the listeners. We just can't thank you enough for this.
Oh guys, it was my privilege and my honor. I'm humbled that, you know, you asked me to come on, and I'm happy. And, you know, like I said, it's about building relationships. And now two more relationships have been built. So it's great.
That's awesome. Well, thank you, Jimmy.
All right, guys.